KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, tonight in Oakland, the Golden State Warriors have another playoff game against the Dallas Mavericks. What will a basketball championship mean for the home team in Northern California, and how do the chances look for victory? Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum. Tuesday night in Dallas, the pro basketball home team Golden State Warriors lost 118-112 in a first-round game in the Western Conference playoff games. That game made the best-of-seven series 3-2, with the Warriors hoping to clinch things tonight in another playoff game at the Oracle Arena in Oakland. It's been 16 years since the Warriors have won an NBA playoff, and they were not expected to get as far this year as they have. Dallas was the year's top-seeded team, while the Warriors were seeded eighth. In this Forum Hour, we want to talk about the team and its prospects for victory and what victory will mean to fans and supporters throughout Northern California. Let me tell you who is joining us here in studio. Jeffrey Klein, who worked as editor and investigative reporter for Mother Jones for many years and also with the San Jose Mercury News, but is an Uber fan, or I think what I could describe as puts the fan in fanatic when it comes to the Warriors, rabid fan. Jeffrey, good morning.
Good morning.
Also here in studio is Ron Thomas, a longtime sports writer for many publications, The Chronicle, the Marin IJ, was an NBA reporter and editor for USA Today and followed the Warriors for a number of years. He's now director of Morehouse College Journalism and Sports Program and also the author of a book called They Cleared the Lane, the NBA's Black Pioneers. And we welcome you, Ron Thomas.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
And with us by phone is Rich Lieberman, who now is a columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle and writes a weekly column with them, as well as writing for Materin Ross in the Chronicle, also known as Big Vinny. Rich, good morning.
Morning, Michael.
Glad to have you with us this morning. Let me begin with the Uber fans here. What is it that drives you to this team, Jeffrey Klein? I mean, what makes you the Uber fan?
Well, an Uber fan is always a fan. I think the definition of a fan is you stick with your team when they're losing, of which the Warriors have done a lot. A season stretched into a decade and so on. But it feels as if the Warriors were taken away from basketball fans, and now they're returning, and it would be the biggest upset in basketball playoff history. But more importantly, they resemble the old Warriors when they were good, not just in Nelson, but this kind of find the right people, cut them loose, slash to the basket, dish off, play for fun. So it was something that Warrior fans enjoyed for many years, and now it seems within our grasp.
When you talk about the biggest upset perhaps in basketball history, that's why this has gotten so much national attention, I imagine.
Yeah, and there's many wonderful subplots. I mean, Nelson worked for the Dallas owner, Mark Cuban. Yesterday, our own Peter Waldman in the Wall Street Journal did a great stirring up tension article in which he got Cuban to say that Nelson's a loser. So you have these two, and they're in a $6.6 million
dispute. This isn't just
hype.
These guys hate each other.
Oh, they despise each other. And then there's a lot of friendships. Nelson basically is connected to everybody in the lead, and it's an underdog story. Plus, Barkley's made-for-TV shenanigans have united everyone in the Bay Area.
Should say Charles Barkley, the former basketball star, saying San Francisco and Oakland he doesn't like. He likes Sacramento much more, and also made some, I guess, disparaging remarks about the Warriors.
Yeah? He made disparaging remarks about everybody. I mean, mostly in fun, but the truth is, I think the rest of the country loves the Warriors. We're not the only city in the world that thinks we're the best place to live. We're just the only ones who happen to be right.
What does a championship mean to this area, though, in your judgment? I mean, you know, you've been kind of connecting this to the 49ers and the Billy Beane's A's, and does it mean as much as it means with football and baseball?
Absolutely. And the Nelson team that's emerging, I mean, granted, these players all change and coaches all change and they come from all different places. But the Bay Area teams, when they've been successful, say with Walsh with his West Coast offense or Billy Beane with his money ball, they've been very innovative. They've looked, in Beane's case, for players not valued by other people. They have to work with a pauper's war chest. And Bill Walsh essentially invented the short, perfectly timed forward pass. So now he's playing a highly unusual game of basketball. So we would not only be winners, you know, no matter what happens, we're winners this year, but we're innovators, which the Bay Area likes to be.
So, Rich Lieberman, let's hear from you now on why are you the Uber fan?
Well, I think, first of all, like many people in the Bay Area, I think basketball is kind of, it's a truly an international game. It's easy to follow. It's something to which this area has always been supportive of the Warriors, going all the way back to 72 through 75 when they won their first, and I may add, their only championship. The Bay Area has always been a very big bastion of basketball, whether it's the NBA or the ABA. And the Warriors, I think they epitomize the kind of scrappy, you know, come from behind underdog image, and certainly that made itself very, very much in the focus in 75.
Is it more a bastion, though, when they're winning out here? What you hear about fans in this area, huh?
Well, absolutely, but keep in mind, this team has been the laughing stock. I mean, they haven't made the playoffs and won a playoff game in 16 years or 13 years, whatever, but they've always drawn well. Only in the early 70s, when Rick Barry vaulted and went back to the ABA, did they suffer at the box office. But as Ron could tell you, Ron Thomas covered the team in the 80s for the Chronicle, the games have, you know, most of the time have been sellouts, and of course they've led the NBA in attendance for some years. And even when they were playing badly in the last few years before Nelson arrived, they've always drawn extremely well at the Oakland Coliseum.
Did they blow it Tuesday night?
That was a great game. It was one of the greatest playoff games I've ever seen. I think a lot of people would agree. I think their inexperience and lack of experience in playoff games showed at the very end, because they simply could not stop Dallas, but they had some defensive transgressions, and they had the proverbial game in hand, and they simply could not come. I think the fact also, you got to give Dallas credit, because they're soon-to-be MVP Dirk Nowitzki hit some incredible shots, and I think they just froze. But they still have a lot of confidence. They still are the absolute underdog, and I expect that they win tonight very heavily.
Well, Don Nelson said that the defense strategy fell apart when it mattered, and I guess he was talking about Nowitzki, wasn't he?
Well, Nowitzki is a great player. I mean, he's probably going to be the MVP. He hasn't really shown up for a lot of the games. He was completely overmatched and taken out of the game in the games in Oakland, and particularly the first game in Dallas. He kind of disappeared, and his own coach called him out in the newspaper. So he really made the type of plays that MVP players make, making those two tough three-point plays and playing very good defensively. Warriors broke down, but I still think that they have the confidence to come on. They're going to be very, very rabid tonight, and the crowd will be extremely good. And I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, if they somehow lost tonight. I could see them very easily going into Dallas and winning game 7.
Rich Lieberman, who writes for the Chronicle, and also with us this morning is Ron Thomas, who writes, the sports stuff that you've been reading for years, not only the Chronicle going back to the 80s, as was mentioned, but also the Myrna IJ and the Oakland Tribune, and has been following the Warriors for years. Let's get a little historical perspective from you first, Ron. The 87 series.
Well, it's very interesting watching this series, because when I covered the Warriors from 79 to 87, and in 87, when they made the playoffs, they had the identical record that this year's team had, which was 42-40, and the Warriors at that point had not made the playoffs for 10 years, and they had really been terrible at, you know, some stretches when I was there. Everyone remembers when J.B. Carroll played a year in Italy, and that year the Warriors went 0 for January. So they were I've seen a lot of losses in my lifetime. So one of the interesting things is, you know, everyone's been talking about what a remarkable series this was, but this has been, particularly if the Warriors win. But in 1987, it also was remarkable. The Warriors that year faced Utah in a best-of-five series, and they became, I think it was the second team in NBA history to lose the first two games of a best-in-five and come back and win it. And what happened was, it was Karl Malone's rookie year, to show you how far back this goes. And at the end of the second game, which was in Utah, the game was over. And then for some reason, Malone had the ball, and he threw it at Greg Ballard, who was the Warriors' veteran, you know, backup forward. And Ballard threw it, just fired it right back at Malone. And then a fight started. And all of a sudden, the court was filled with players and refs and people, and I weigh 135 pounds, and I was stupid enough to wander on the court also. And it changed the whole series, because all of a sudden, the Warriors, who were just dragging themselves off the court after being down 0-2, all of a sudden became the spirited, feisty team and came back and won the last three in a row. So that really something I remember as being really memorable in my career.
Well, there are memorable things going on in this series, too. I mean, Jason Richardson in that imbroglio with the fans, and there's things that actually raise some serious Jason Terry throwing Baron Davis to the floor. I mean, there have been a lot of excitement. Hasn't Steven Johnson thrown out a couple times? I mean, this is more excitement than usual or not?
Well, you know, for playoff series, not necessarily, because as the playoffs go along, it gets more and more intense, and there are more and more confrontations. I covered a lot of Lakers-Celtics finals, and there was always somebody getting in a fight, somebody pushing somebody. Over a period of time, you know, guys, you make a hard foul against someone in game one, and he wants to get even in game two. So it just becomes more and more intense, and by the time you get to, like, here, game six or game seven, everybody's on edge. So it just, the drama just picks up.
And don't you think they also
Jeff Klein.
Know each other? They're matching up in long series, and they come to hate each other because it's kind of a feud in a way, just like relatives staying too long.
I think that's true, and I think also the matchups are one of the most interesting things in playoffs, because it's like if that, you know, there's always somebody who breaks out and has a big game, and then the other team has to shut them off. Right. So then the other team shuts them off, and then the first guy's team has to pop up somebody else who has a big game. So you saw how the Warriors were able to contain Nowitzki, and then suddenly he breaks loose. And so there's this constant battle of matchups and battle of wits, and it really becomes just adds to the drama.
It's kind of the epitome of competition when you really get down to it. I mean, it brings out all of the kind of atavistic, dare I use that word?
Well, it's internecine, too, because, you know, Nelson gave Avery Johnson, the Dallas' coach, he played him, he likes him, he gave him his start, and there's a lot of head games going on between them, just as Ron said about, I'm substituting here, you're substituting there. And then now they're playing this silly confidence game where Johnson says this morning, as did Cuban yesterday in the Wall Street Journal, that all the pressure's on them, whereas Nelson previously said, hey, we have nothing to lose. Cuban went so far as to call Nelson somebody who only thrives in the underdog role and will fail now that he's expected to win. So there's a lot of trash talk.
And Richard Lieberman, you want in here?
Well, I think, again, this reminds me a lot also that these guys are like, I'm talking these guys being the Mavericks are, you know, very similar to the, I would call them the New York Yankees of the NBA. I mean, they are owned by a billionaire who elicits kind of a lot of cackles right now. He's kind of the proverbial villain, if you will, here, because he just looks like an everyday guy who happens to have about $7 billion. And obviously the subplot between him and Nelson couldn't be more ripe. And I think there's a lot of animosity towards him. He seems like a little spoiled brat sitting courtside and making antics and very, very overt facial mug. And there's no doubt Nelson's trying to play the underdog image. But look, let's face it right now. I'm sure your two guests will agree. The Warriors have clearly outplayed them. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think they'd be very disappointed if they're somehow not able to pull this series out, because, I mean, they've outplayed them. They've out-hustled them. They take their MVP out of the game, except for the game the other night. And, I mean, they're expected to win. And don't believe me, there is some bad blood between Nelson and Cuban. And I would say that even though they're not expected to prevail here, if they don't win, I think they'd be very disappointed, obviously.
Ron Thomas.
Yeah, I think an interesting thing is the comeback that's been made by Avery Johnson. Right. I think everyone, he was, you know, criticized greatly for his for the first game where he changed his starting lineup and didn't start a center. And I know why he did it, because they had lost their last four or five games in a row to the Warriors, and he was trying to, you know, even up the matchups. But in fact, as a team coming in with 67 victories, you know, for you to make the first move was really, really strange. It was like he was conceding to a team that hadn't even beaten him yet. But he's come back as a coach, and where you really saw it was two things. One, when he called out Nowitzki, before the last game. But the other was, I think Johnson won that game two nights ago because he double-teamed Baron Davis in the last 3 minutes of that game, which meant that Davis was giving the ball up, and Jason Richardson ended up running the offense those last few possessions, and the Warriors were shut out the last 3 minutes of that game.
The face also where the Warriors truly, truly had a chance to finish that off. I think that was really on Nelson more than anything. I have not heard a lot of people talk about that. When you have a 9-point lead, as they did, they completely overtook the game. The momentum was completely, I mean, they virtually put 21,000 people in Dallas's arena. There was nobody saying anything. They were in a state of shock, and that's when the Warriors' game actually, I think, hurt them. They, instead of maybe playing the clock and being more conscious and playing a little more possession basketball, they simply got, I think they lost it at the end in terms of just physical activity, and they started to make these irrational shots and didn't use the clock. So that was a game that, you know, I hope it doesn't come back to haunt them, because they clearly had control. Even with Nowitzki hitting those clutch shots, they still had control of the game, and then they, you know, they kind of, what happened at the end, and, you know, Steven Jackson getting thrown out and all that.
The phrase that some use is they had house money, meaning they were ahead, or and that you play perhaps not with the kind of finesse that you would play normally if you weren't ahead. But they'll go into tonight 3-2, and they can clinch it tonight. And what is a victory, what does a championship like this mean to the Bay Area, Jeff Klein?
Well, I think it means, I'm of the school that championships to all areas in the world, really, I mean, having gone to a bunch of Italian soccer games, mean a lot, because they, first of all, there's a physical sensation of winning. There's no question when you leave a game, if you've won or you're lost, you actually feel different. And so the Warriors would feel like they've come from behind and won and outsmarted somebody who's playing the arch villain like Cuban. I would agree with what Big Vinny said, except I think this night, apropos of what Ron said, they won't let Nowitzki open at the end. That was their mistake, as they kind of relaxed into victory. And he had essentially two unguarded shots. So this is a chess game that Nelson and the Warriors won't make the same mistake in at the end. I mean, I can't say prior to that, but they're not going to make the same end game mistake. I think it invigorates an area if you think people feel like winners.
Well, keep in mind also, real quickly, that even if they win tonight, they got two more rounds to go. This is simply the opening round of the playoffs. I mean, the playoffs last 6 weeks, and I'm it's kind of a double whammy. If they were to win tonight, then I hope there's no letdown, because then now they win tonight, the winner faces the winner of the Houston Utah series, which is going on. So they have two more roads to hurdle before we could start saying things about championship. But this would be huge.
Yeah,
Jeff Klein. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to add a highbrow point here, hopefully my last one. But if you read Clifford Geertz's Cockfighting in Bali, probably the best article written about any sports. You know, he analyzes all the throwing of the money with your particular rooster and so on. But at the end of the day, Geertz says sports is about bonding together when you lose. And so the Warriors will probably lose at some point, not tonight. I think they'll beat Dallas, I agree. But some point along the line, they'll lose. People will remain fans the next year, and that's what bonds people together, is the ability to stick with a team after it's lost. That is the essence of fandom. And then you exist in a community outside of all your differences, because you're sticking up for your players who didn't quite make it. So I think sports at the end of the day is about sustaining losses, not about wins.
Ron Thomas.
Well, I think an interesting thing would be if the Warriors win this series and they play Houston. Then it'd be a fascinating matchup, because then they have to go against Yao Ming.
Right.
And what the Warriors, you know, I think Biedrins has been very, very good this year. So he does give them a pretty mobile big man. But the Yao Ming would be such a challenge for them. And it just would be interesting to see how they attack it.
And
so I just, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. And one of the things about the playoffs is if a team like the Warriors wins one series, then you never know what can happen.
Right.
Because then you've got momentum, and you get into team chemistry, and they're a very difficult team to guard, because they've got so many players who are so flexible in terms of positions and have so much offensive versatility. So they're a real challenge, and they'll be scaring people if they can get by Dallas.
And there's going to be additional internecine storylines if they're playing Phoenix at some point. Nelson said Nash was his best player to coach, not Nowitzki. Mm-hmm. And if at the end of the day they're playing Detroit, which seems likely, there's Chris Webber against Nelson, which was the fight that destroyed the Bay Area franchise initially.
We love these stories behind the actual games, don't we? I mean, fans really eat this stuff.
It's not just
up.
Fans. If you listen to players and if you listen even to the announcers, I'm always struck by, you know, at this level of play, an awful lot of ability is assumed, and it's extraordinary ability. But the players themselves, Ron would be in a better position to comment here, they're into head games, too. They're into who's dominating them too. So it's not just the fans who are
creating
stories.
Build up
stories.
Their adrenaline and stuff and their intensity and passion, Ron.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I heard Jackson, as he was running down the court in one of these games, yelled at the Dallas bench after he had beaten Nowitzki, "Put somebody on me who can guard me." So they're talking mm-hmm. stuff to each other a lot of the time.
Well, I'll go back to the Lakers Celtics. It's great when a team is constantly in the playoffs because then you build up these rivalries that go year after year. Mm-hmm. And then every year you could look to Dennis Johnson trying to guard Magic Johnson.
Right.
You know, and then Michael Cooper versus Larry Bird. And it just becomes this ongoing rivalry. And you hope that the Warriors get to the point where they're in the playoffs every year and become a threat. And people are talking about how are we going to stop Baron Davis and so on.
We're hoping franchise here, in other words, huh? Or something along those lines. I mean, how does this team compare when you look back historically at, well, the Lakers, obviously, or for that matter, the Celtics of old? I mean, is this a great, potentially great franchise? Are we talking about that?
Well, I think the chemistry switch this year was so interesting and volatile, it would be way too soon to tell, but I think the big storyline this year was a trade, which was kind of a daylight robbery from Indiana. Mm-hmm. And the biggest element there was you got rid of this Dunleavy, who was, and then you got Steven Jackson. There were other players, but that was the biggest part. And Jackson's kind of the anti-Dunleavy. I mean, Dunleavy was like a whiter shade of pale. He wouldn't go to the basket. He showed no energy. And Jackson's the most competitive player on the Warriors, but what I think he's done...
Is he going to be suspended for this last
thing? No, he wasn't. Mm-mm. But I think the thing that's paradoxical that's occurred, this often happens in Congress, people. You elect somebody who's way out there. I mean, Wacko Jacko is way out there. And then the space is created for Baron Davis to emerge as a real leader because he's no longer at the perimeter of the team in emotion and so on. And if Davis can emerge as a superstar, which he's entirely capable of doing, his health notwithstanding, I mean, his health, he could go any minute with his knee, but I think they are capable of being an extremely good team.
Well, we're going to open our phone lines and find out what you, the listeners, think about this team, the home team. A lot of drama here. A chess game has been mentioned. What does the series mean to you? And, you know, sound off about the Warriors if you care to, or let us know what your thoughts are. We welcome your questions or comments. You can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. This is a national spotlighted game and series, so indeed join us, whether you're listening to us on Sirius Satellite or Internet as well. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Talking with Jeff Klein, many years with Mother Jones and the San Jose Mercury News, also wrote for Sporting News and does some sports stories about the Bay Area. Ron Thomas, veteran sports writer, and Rich Lieberman of The Chronicle also with us. Join us. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and yes, this is the NPR affiliate, and yes, we are talking about sports this hour. This is a big story, the Warriors being in the playoff series, and tonight at Oakland, possibly clinching it, 3-2 going into tonight against the Dallas Mavericks. We've got some Uber fans with us, as well as a couple of sports journalists, and we have you as well, if you'd like to join us. Again, our toll-free number for your calls is 866-733-6786, or you can email us forum@kqed.org. And the real question is, how much does this series mean to you, those of you here in the Bay Area, and how much are you involved in it, and what kind of stake do you have in it, really, even if you're not a fan, and even if you sort of marginally, or maybe even not at all, follow basketball. Rich Lieberman's with us by phone. He's a columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle, does a weekly column for them, and writes for Mater and Ross, known in the world of commerce as Big Vinny, on those commercials for pizza. Ron Thomas is a longtime sports writer, and he was not a sports writer for the Oakland Tribune, just about every other newspaper, the Examiner. I said earlier the Oakland Tribune, but he's been with the Examiner, the Chronicle, the Marin IJ, USA Today, and author of a book, They Cleared the Lane, the NBA Black Pioneers, and is going to be in April the director of Morehouse College's new journalism and sports program. And I want to make mention of this because there will be a lot of emphasis in that on journalism and sports, and it was inspired by the late Ralph Wiley, former Oakland Tribune sports columnist, maybe that was the confusion, and by Spike Lee, a Morehouse graduate. So let's give them the props, I guess. Ron Thomas, pretty exciting stuff, yeah.
Well, it's very exciting. You know, Ralph and I, actually, when I started covering the NBA, Ralph used to sit next to me, and he was working for the Tribune at the time, and so we were friends, and so it's he had this dream about starting this program, he and Spike together. And a big reason is that there's a big disparity in the numbers of African-American sports journalists around the country compared to the number of African-American athletes, particularly in basketball and in football. And so I think one of the reasons they wanted to start this program was to create a program that would be a feeder for newspapers and now online services also, and provide sports journalists. So we're going to be a general journalism program, but it's going to have a special emphasis on sports.
Well, good luck to you with that. Of course, it means we lose you to Atlanta, but that's their gain.
That's right.
Also want to mention Jeffrey Klein's with us and has been an editor, an investigative reporter, and co-founder of Mother Jones Magazine, worked with San Jose Mercury News, and is a rabid Warriors fan, but also has written occasionally about Bay Area sports franchises, including a story for the Sporting News, which was called The Will to Win, comparing the Warriors to the 49ers. Let's go to your calls. And Matt is first up here. Morning, Matt.
Hey there. Wanted to see if there was an update on the Jason Richardson tussle with the fan. And also wanted to find out if Courtney's going to watch the game tonight.
Ron Thomas, do we know anything about that imbroglio with Jason Richardson?
Well, as of this morning's newspapers, nothing had come from the league. There's been no punishment regarding that. Richardson said that really nothing happened between him and the fan. And I would hope that the NBA would not suspend, a Richardson for something like that. It was minor. I didn't even notice that. I was watching the game on TV. And the other thing is, it'd be terrible to take such a key player out of the game for what was a minor incident.
I don't think David Stern's
David Stern's commissioner of basketball.
Yeah, he said on the air, he was out at the Warriors game, and he said these are the greatest fans in the league. They've been through thick and thin, actually an awful lot more thin than thick. So he would bring a lot of, ire on himself for a very minor incident to remove Richardson.
The other difference. Courtney, who's Courtney at the game? The caller said, will Courtney be at the game? I'm sure he didn't mean Jessica Alba? Or?
Yeah, that's probably
it. Courtney Love, maybe? Is there a mosh pit out on the basketball court? Here's a listener who says, what struck me toward the end of the game was the fact that Dallas began double-teaming Baron Davis each time the Warriors moved the ball across the timeline. At that point, the Warriors struggled, unable to move the ball effectively. Needless to say, the Warriors didn't score again once Davis was double-teamed. Nelson will have to make an adjustment, but someone will have to step up if Dallas uses the same tactic tonight. I've heard no one comment until this moment, but then the subject shifted away. This was a key adjustment on Dallas's part.
Well, the thing is, that was the key. I mean, we talk about the Warriors not taking good shots at the end of the game and not milking the clock. Well, the reason is because the guy who usually has the ball, Baron Davis, didn't have it. Jason Richardson, he gave it up to Richardson. I think they were taken by surprise. Avery Johnson pulled that out of his hat at the perfect time,
right,
and the Warriors didn't have time to mentally adjust. Given the chance, I think Davis now would give the ball up and then run back and get it again. And they might even set a pick for him so he can run back and get it again and then run the play. But there was just so little time left, they didn't have time to make that adjustment.
Yeah. All props to Avery Johnson that he tried that earlier in the season, earlier in this series, by trapping Davis, but it didn't work. So obviously came up with a new formula for doubling Davis, but if we're seeing it, believe me, Dom Nelson saw it. So I would expect exactly what Ron said, they'll pass the ball back and forth. But I think if it's crunch time, you'll see Davis cutting towards the basket and a lot of slashers that he'll pass to. This is a very common basketball phenomenon, which is some star rises, and then the other war for a team, puts all their players on him, and then the star has to figure out how to get it to other people in a way that Kobe Bryant hasn't in Los Angeles. But I think Davis can rise to this, and certainly Nelson can.
And we'll bring some more callers in. Andre, good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment and get some, you know, everybody's making a big deal now about the Warriors and them getting to where they're at. I heard a story a couple years ago that the Warriors were one of the most profitable teams in all the NBA, and it seems like they were making a lot of money, but they just weren't spending that money for players, and now it seems like they're doing it, and hey, surprise, surprise, they're starting to win. So for all these years, no one said anything, and no one held management accountable. Hey, you're the most profitable team. Why aren't you spending the money?
You know, it's not a question. It's a question of who you spend the money on.
Right.
You have to remember the Warriors drafted Todd Fuller. And they, when they could have drafted Kobe Bryant, I mean,
don't mention it. It's very upsetting.
I mean, I think the management at the time didn't even look at Bryant because he was a high school player, and they didn't believe in bringing in a guy straight from high school. So, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, where you spend your money and the moves you make. And you know, Jeff was completely right. The change in this team occurred when Mullen pulled off that trade with Indiana. And it was just a brilliant move. It gave Nelson what he needs, slashing, energetic players with the mobility to play good defense and offense.
But, Rich, you were making the analogy before to the Yankees and the Mavericks. And in a sense, could you make the analogy a little bit to the Warriors, to Billy Ball?
Oh, absolutely. I've had my public writings about Chris Coad. I think he's you can find a lot of fault with him. But one thing I'll give the guy credit for is that, first of all, this team has a lot of money. I mean, they play it. They're the only team in town in the fourth largest TV market in America. But he did step to the plate and signed, you know, he took on a contract of Baron Davis, who makes $16 million a year. He made this lavish contract with a guy who doesn't even play, and that's Donald Foyle, who probably they're trying to get rid of. He signed Jason Richardson and the aforementioned Dunleavy and Troy Murphy, who are no longer with the team, to multi-year, multi-million-dollar contracts. So they actually have gone out and spent the money. They did get rid of the two players who are no longer here and brought in Richardson or Al Harrington and the aforementioned Steven Jackson. So you can fault Cohen for a lot of things. It's a little noisy there. There's a lot of pizza giveaways. There's a preponderance of noise in that building. But I'll tell you what, you can't fault him for spending the money. And they're paying Baron Davis makes $16 million a year, and he's got two more years left on the contract. So he has gone out there and spent the money needed to bring championship-level basketball to the Bay Area.
Ron Thomas.
Yeah, I think another thing, and you know, Cohen, I think, deservedly has gotten a lot of blame for things that have gone wrong in the past. But one other thing that he and Nelson should get credit for is that they buried the hatchet.
Right.
I mean, these are guys that when Nelson left, I mean, he was suing Cohen. And so, you know, somehow they put that behind them and came together, and it's turned out to be a great thing for the Warriors.
And we'll take more of your calls. Philip, you're on. Thanks for waiting. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
During the last two regular season games, I loved our chances against the Mavericks because, and I was praying that we would take the eighth seed.
Philip, I think we lost you there. The cell phone went dead, but call us back if you want, and we'll go in the meantime to more of your calls. And by the way, our toll-free number for your calls is 866-733-6786, or you can always send an email. And the email address is forum@kqed.org. Art from Sonoma, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a great Don Nelson story, and this is kind of the ilk of why I really came to admire him as a coach. I used to live in the L.A. area and had season seats up in the Colonnade from 86 to 95. And in the early 90s, Golden State is in town. I knew someone in security, and they would allow me to move down to no-show seats. So it's a midweek game, and I find myself, the end of the first quarter, sitting two rows behind the Golden State bench. And Golden State is not doing well, and Mullins isn't hitting his shots, and Richmond, and they're just out of sync. And Mullins and Don Nelson, rather, starts pacing and engaging in histrionics to motivate. through the second quarter, he intentionally gets himself teed up, thrown out of the game to motivate his team. They went on to win the game. What a coach.
Thank you for that call. What about this coach, Ron Thomas? The pulse of Don Nelson, if you will.
Well, I think an interesting thing about him is often contended that he doesn't want a great center. I don't know if he'd know what to do with the Yao Ming. You know, you've got more mobility than most guys at size. But you know, I don't think he likes to play with a big guy in the middle you have to constantly feed the ball to and go to. I think he prefers to have a team that's very mobile, you know, and he prefers to have a team where you can take out the center. He doesn't have to play 40 minutes a game, and you can bring in a smaller player if you want to change the pace or the style of play. So I think one reason he probably agreed to come to the Warriors was because they had that type of talent. And it turned out that Murphy and Dunleavy weren't what he thought they were going to be, and then they got players who really fit his mold better. So it's very interesting. I mean, he doesn't want to play the conventional big guy in the low post type game.
I also think he's quite characteristic of the great coaches. There's many, obviously, but recently, if you take Pat Riley or you take Phil Jackson or you take Don Nelson, they're almost always the marginal player. They're the sixth person on the team who doesn't have the absolute raw ability that the other players do. But they've learned to play the game and play it well by studying and playing hard. And I think that's why he doesn't like super talented players. He likes to figure out all the edges. And he's known, and he'll do it tonight, for moving the ball around so the absolute best matchup is happening instantaneously for him. And that's the sign of the sixth man, really. That's why the Magics don't turn out to be good coaches, because they go out and they coach and they say, hey, just do this. And the players say, I can't do that. You could do that, but I'm not as gifted as you are. But, so the non-gifted coaches athletically are often the best.
You know, I just want to give Nelson more credit for him as a player. I think it's forgotten that he was the sixth man, which is a revered position in Boston Celtics, you know, lore, for like I think five NBA titles, and he averaged something like 13 points a game and 7 rebounds. His second last year, when he was about 35 years old, he led the NBA in shooting percentage, and he was an outside shooter. He wasn't an inside guy.
He could shoot. Could he run or jump?
Well, he jumped well enough to get a lot of rebounds. And and so, you know, I think he was a better player than people give him credit for.
Okay. Let me go to some of the emails here. This is a listener who says, one thing that seems to be overlooked is that on Tuesday the Warriors came back from a 20-point deficit on the opponent's court in a playoff game. This is not an easy thing to do. I am a huge Warriors fan, but your panel has to agree this is just great basketball and great for the NBA.
Yeah, I think it's the one. That game the other night, I would put it on par as one of the best basketball games, certainly playoff basketball games that I ever. I wanted to make quickly a point about Nelson too. I think this is probably, and he said as much, this might be his best coaching in his entire career, his best coaching year. You'll remember in early March, he basically conceded the playoffs. He came out and said, you know, I think I may have failed. I may have overestimated this team, or I overestimated my own ability. And they were essentially gone. I mean, their record was 26-35. They had just lost this horrendous game in Washington, where the coach went out on the floor, got thrown out of the game. And then the very, very, very next night, they went into Detroit, could have very easily have mailed it in and conceded. Instead, they beat the Pistons on their home floor. And after that, they went 16-5 and made that amazing run. You talk about coaching. So I think Nelson, he is a tremendous tactician, a tremendous motivator. And wouldn't it be funny, or perhaps even terrific, that everything that's eluded him is an NBA championship. As great a player he was, he certainly won a championship as a player, but he's never won as a coach. So this is very eerily reminiscent of 1975, when a bunch of scrappy guys headed by Rick Barry and a bunch of unknowns went on to win the NBA championship against a team that everybody expected would sweep them, the Washington Bullets, and they ended up sweeping Al Addo's team, sweeping the Bullets. So I would not put it past, if the Warriors were to somehow get past this round, of course they'd have to face somebody like a Phoenix, or most ominously a team like San Antonio. Nelson to win his first NBA title, that would be extremely, extremely wonderful.
And let me go to more of your calls, but first a couple more emails. What do you think about this, Ron Thomas? Richard in Carson City says the players are overwhelmingly African-American. What's the racial background of the Warriors fan base? Any significant interest among Latinos and Asians?
I don't have an answer to that one. There are Latino and Asian basketball fans, but what percentage they are of Warrior fans, I have no idea.
Nobody's taking a toll, I guess, at the game.
No.
Here's Brian, who says Davis could have taken off as soon as he got the ball at the end rather than waiting for the trap. He couldn't think and, frankly, looked exhausted.
Well, that would be the second reason they would lose is I don't think they. I agree with Big Vinny. We're going to win. I think we're going to win by a lot, but we could run out of gas. One other thing I would say about Nelson, which makes him loved in the Bay Area, is he's his own man. He's willing to fight with owners and leave if it's not right. But more importantly, he says the truth. For example, Dunleavy, before he was traded, was being booed by the fans. And I remember something to the effect, they asked Nelson, what do you think about Dunleavy being booed? He said, I'm not booing him, but I understand why the fans are, which is highly unusual, in my experience, for a coach to be that direct.
You know, I got to tell you, I interviewed Nelson. It's probably been at least 20 years, but I thought, this is a no BS guy.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, he talks straight talk, and you don't get that kind
of thing. That's part of his charm, too. You know, he has those post-game pressure. That's why I think he's got the respect of his players. I mean, obviously they're winning, so obviously he's going to be happy. But in dire contrast to a lot of these coaches in the NBA, like the guy in whose name escapes me right now, but the guy in Houston who used to coach the Knicks, or some of these coaches, they go out and they speak in a lot of they tap dance around questions. And you're right, Nelson is a very much of a hands-on, aw shucks, in-your-face kind of a guy. He does speak the language. And he said the other night, he broke it down right away. He said, hey, we failed defensively at the end of the game, and kind of called out a few of his players. And who would find, now I don't know if this really happened or not, I don't know whether he just said it, but the NBA didn't find Steven Jackson, and he called Steven Jackson out, and he said, hey, look, this guy was told not to clap. However, you know, he's got to get the message, and however, you know, innocuous it looked, if the NBA doesn't find him, I'm going to find
him.
Well,
I think that was tactical, actually. I honestly think it was a brilliant tactical move. In the first instance, he immediately announced he was finding them, so Stern wouldn't do anything, the commissioner wouldn't do anything graver. I'm sure he will be, the players will be fine, but I think Nelson was, I think he's completely honest, except when he's sly.
Jackson said, look at the tape. I was just clapping. Well, yeah. Nelson can be sly too, but Nelson can also be really blunt. He can be disarmingly charming, as you've indicated, but he can also be armingly. In fact, we've got a caller on point here on Nelson. Charles, go ahead.
Hi. You know, I'm originally a Boston Celtics fan. I moved out to the Bay Area about 3 years ago, and, you know, I am vicariously experiencing, like, a gold rush with the Warriors and what they're doing and stuff. I just had a couple points to make. I think that if you paid attention to the game, like, last game, what I found astounding was that Dallas came out in the first half and played the best basketball they could possibly play. They were raining threes. They were, like, all over. And you know what? Every single time the ball went through the hoop, the Warriors took the ball out and ran it right at them. And the end of the first half, it was 62-55, and Baron Davis was clapping as he walked into the locker room. And I think that, like, that is the attitude that the Warriors are bringing to this game. I think that if they have a killer instinct, they can beat these guys, and I think that they're going to run Houston, who I think is the next opponent. The only way that you deal with Yao Ming is you run those Rockets right off the floor, and then you meet Phoenix in the end, and that's going to be the true, like, you know, war field, you know, because, like, you know, if you're going to play the tempo style game and you're going to, like, you know, win it, and I think that these guys have that potential to get there, you know, and I want to say that to them tonight as a Warrior fan, because you dismiss the Mavericks, you run the Rockets off the court, and then you're looking at Phoenix. That's where the real blood is going to be shed, and I think that the Warriors can do it, and I'm rooting for them tonight.
And we thank you for the call. You sound like a man of tactician mind here, and we'll get some more callers on. Yosef joining us from the city. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
I was at the Warrior game when the Mavericks were on a 17-game run victory run that was the most up until that time in basketball. And so we were out there for Jewish Heritage Night, and they asked me to bring a secret weapon of the Jewish people to be used in times like this. So I brought out the shofar, which is used on Rosh Hashanah, an instrument of victory and peace. And I was blowing the horn all over the stadium that night. And
this is the ram's horn, right?
This is the ram's horn, that's right. And
it made a difference, you
what?
Say? I say you think it made a difference, huh?
For sure. For sure. You know, it's all about spirit and all about fan support and a little shtick. And I gave this rally rabbi, which actually started at the Giants Jewish Heritage Night last year, which is going to be again August 8th at the stadium. We're doing a big tailgate out there. But I gave this rally rabbi a mission statement that I'd like to, it's a short four-liner that I'd like to read to you, okay?
Go.
Which is really the spirit of behind sport and life. From the players on the bench and on to the court and into the paint, up into the stands with the fans and out into the street and our homes and beyond, rally with the rally rabbi with acts of goodness and kindness and teamwork, and we will surely be victorious in victory in this game and for world peace.
Thank you for that statement. Appreciate the call.
I just want to know if he's bringing the chauffeur to the game tonight. That's all I really want to know.
We want to be ecumenical, too. I mean, maybe there are some other things that ought to be brought by other faiths. What are you going to say, Rich Lieberman?
No, I was just going to add that around Passover this year, if I can add a little bit of a Talmudic reference, I was sitting around a table. It was the same night one of the Warriors were playing their last home games, and I said, why is this night different from all other nights? And I said that the Warriors are going to be making the playoffs.
The old joke also about the Jewish man who's bending down to be knighted, and he has payuses, and he has a skullcap on, and the queen says, why is this night different than all other nights? All right. We go to more calls here. Mark, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was, first off, I think it's great to hear the sports talk radio on NPR, so I like that. And also, we just want to make a mention, I've been hearing lots of talk about this being one of the biggest upsets in NBA history as a number 8 versus a number 1 seed, but it sure seems like the 8th is sort of not really legit in the Warriors' case, because the team that they have on the floor now is completely different than the team at the beginning of the season, so their record really shouldn't... you know, it's really indicative of how good the team is coming into the playoffs. So I was just wondering what the panel thinks about that.
I agree with that. And you know what? Most of the season, the Warriors didn't have, as he correctly mentioned, so this team really didn't start having its team on the floor until, like, you know, late into the middle of early March. I mean, you had injuries most of the year. You had the trade. So the 42-40 season is not indicative of the kind of team that they have. So you're right. They're not a traditional number 8 team, and I think they match up very, very well against Dallas. And I think potentially, assuming they were to move on, that the biggest problem they're going to face is not this team tonight, is I believe a team like San Antonio, which plays them very well. They're quite the opposite of Dallas. The Warriors have won, I think, 8 of the past 10. They have not been able to handle San Antonio, and they've had a lot of difficulties against Phoenix. So he's right. This is not a traditional number 8 seed.
Ron Thomas, how does seeding take place? I mean,
it's based on the record.
It's just based on the record entirely.
In each conference.
And then?
And then you match number 1 against number 8, et cetera, number 2 against number 7.
Okay. Yeah. Just for the record, and let me get more callers on here for the record as well. Olin joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. Two things. We need to have a good game since he's not been a factor to help them get over this hump. And on Jackson's antics at the end of the game, I thought, you know, they still had a chance to pull it out if they kept their cool and, you know, made a steal, made a couple of threes, they could have been in.
What was the first name you mentioned?
Harrington.
Oh, Harrington. I'm sorry. We didn't hear you.
Yeah. Also, Monta Ellis hasn't had a big game either.
He's showing his youth. Mm-hmm. He's kind of, you feel he's a little bit overwhelmed by the tension. And while everyone's right that the Warriors have a good team, not an 8 team, there is a tradition of winning in sports that matters. That's why this is important. The 49ers have had a tradition, and they've been able to bounce back because they're used to winning. So the importance of this game is not just winning now, but beginning a tradition, because that sometimes carries you when you do run out of gas.
One thing I was thinking about this game that's I think something sometimes it gets overlooked, which is when you get into big games like this and when you get down to the last few minutes, mm-hmm. Sometimes guys have a brain lock. And yeah. I think that's where the pressure shows. We think of pressure showing when, you know, you've got two free throws with 10 seconds left and you miss them both. And that's where it's physical. You see the result is physical. But a lot of times in these games, it's mental. You know, where you've been double-teaming Dirk Nowitzki all game long, let's say, and all right. of a sudden in the last few seconds you forget to double-team.
Right.
You know, things like that happen. So well, I think
don't
that's
you think
key.
Among the great players, there's – even at the very top of the pyramid, it divides between the people who've dreamed of winning the game in the last second and other players who want to pass to that player who's dreamed of winning the game in the last second.
Sure, there are very few players who really just love the pressure. And I heard recently, I was talking to a friend of mine about Robert Horry.
Big shot, Bob.
Yeah, and this actually, I think this came up on TNT, and they were talking about why he makes all these great shots, even though he's not a superstar.
Yeah.
And he said he figured out that if he takes a big shot and he misses,
right.
everyone's going to blame the superstar. who they were counting on to win the game. And if he takes the big shot and he wins, he's the hero, the unexpected hero. So that's the way he keeps the pressure.
Well, we're going to look tonight for heroes because certainly a lot of hope here in the Bay Area that the Warriors will clinch it tonight. We're at the end of the hour, and I want to thank Jeff Klein as well as Ron Thomas and Rich Lieberman for their participation in this program. A lot of fun, and yes, we do talk sports occasionally here on NPR. We talk about everything. In fact, only on this program could you have the first hour about the Warriors and the second hour about Iranian underground culture, but that's where we're going in the next hour. I hope you'll join us for that. I want to thank our producers, Robin Giannatasio-Mal, Hermione G., and Kevin Guillory. Also thank Negar Gobadi, who has been working in production with us, and Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.